Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. MTSU has a great many disabled or handicapped students here because the land on our campus is quite flat, and it very easily accommodates people who have problems getting around. They know that they can get all of the assistance they need to go to their classes, concentrate on their studies, and graduate on time. The man who helps to make this happen is the Director of Disabled Student Services, John Harris. And we'll be back to talk with John right after this information break.
MTSU's Todd Art Gallery is featuring two major exhibitions, the Faculty Art Exhibition and the inaugural Nashville Art Gallery Showcase. MTSU's Center for Health and Human Services is forming a partnership with the Tennessee Department of Health and a statewide initiative to promote the control of tobacco use. Tennessee students in 2nd through 5th grades will have the opportunity to learn the Chinese language, thanks to programs sponsored by the Confucius Institute and Center for Educational Media. 16 lessons will be cablecast in Rutherford County and surrounding counties on the university's Education Resource Channel. And MTSU's homecoming gets rolling long before the October 1st homecoming game against the Memphis Tigers. Activities leading up to the big day will include a Paint the Halls Blue contest, a golf tournament, 5K run, and the annual chili cook-off. Visit facebook.com/MTSU homecoming for more details.
John, thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you, Jenna, and I appreciate you asking me to come and talk.
It's been quite a while, but the last time I talked to you, I was interviewing you for a story that didn't quite get done because of some other pressing issues about how there is closed captioning technology that your office uses to help hearing impaired students in the classroom. Talk to us a little bit about that, how you acquire it, how the students come into possession of it, or how it is lent out to them, and but a little bit about how it works.
Well, thank you for asking us about this. It is our university is becoming a growing population for students who are deaf and hard of hearing, and particularly the market for that is two things primarily. You see individuals who are communicate by the use of sign language, and thus they use sign language interpreters. The newest thing and the hottest thing out on the market is the closed captioning, and we do use that here. We have a three students this fall that will be using that equipment. And basically, in our case, we use closed captioning for that. Those students who are, and our company is out of Chicago, as a matter of fact, a company called Alternative Communications. And basically what they do is that the student is sitting here in a classroom at Middle Tennessee State. We provide them with a laptop computer. We provide them with a microphone. We provide the instructor with a microphone and the instructor a lapel mic. They put the lapel mic on. They speak or lecture the class. An individual somewhere in the U.S., whichever captioner that the company has decided to use, they have a laptop as well, and they, as the professor is lecturing, the individual listens, types as fast as they can, everything that's being said word for word, and the student is watching this, the deaf student is watching this on the computer, because what the individual is typing is coming up on a laptop computer, and thus they are then knowing what's going on in the class based on that. It's a pretty unique operation, but it works.
And if the student happens to miss something, there is a backup plan. Doesn't the company also provide a transcript to help fill in the gaps if needed, if the student just missed a word or zoned out or something?
They can, yes. We can request a copy of a transcript of the class. And or the students. Sometimes we ask the students that to also acquire a copy. Wouldn't hurt to acquire a copy of notes from someone who is in the class as well, taking notes in addition to having a copy of the captioned text.
Yeah, it might work out so well that people who are not hearing impaired might end up asking the hearing impaired student for a copy of their notes.
That has happened, actually. You know, once they figure out what's going on, they'll say, hey, listen, is that, you know, when they see copy. Now, it is a, the difference now is that, you know, when we first used it, they actually would do this and send us a copy, a transcript of the notes. But now, of course, it is on the laptop, and I'm getting very much in deep water to try to talk about this this game. But I think they can save it on the laptop, and then thus, if they decide to print it out, or if they decide to save it to a disk or something like that, they can do that. So yes, students might be able to access that information or ask the student for that information, because it's probably pretty good information, because the captioners are very adept at listening and pretty much type almost word for word what is being said. I'm amazed at how the transcript looks at the end.
Now, what about the professor? Does the professor adapt easily to having a lapel mic? How does the faculty feel about this?
It's getting better, you know, because, well, first I used to go in and kind of talk with the instructor and let them know that a deaf student's going to be in there. One of the things that we've tried to evolve to now is to have the student communicate that information to them, and we'll see which one works best. You know, we're still early in the stages of this. We do have our adaptive technology coordinator, Amy Burks, to a lot of times who will go at least to the first class or two with the student to make sure that everything is sort of working appropriately, and to sort of talk to the instructor to make sure that everything is going to be okay. Because a lot of instructors, it is a new way for them there. And so we are, you know, it's a work in progress a lot of times, because you just don't know how it's going to work.
You anticipated my next question. What would you do in the event that there was some kind of technical difficulty that needed solving? And I guess that's it when you have somebody going there with a first class or two.
Yes.
If you can get past that first class or two and everything's in good working order, then you're pretty much assured it'll be that way for the rest of the semester.
Yes, I think so. We usually... fortunately, the company that we work with have very, very good microphones that they've sent us. The contractor actually flew a technician here once a year or so ago, and because we were having trouble with what you're talking about, with connections, and he finally one of the things we like about this particular company, they actually have their own channel, and so they were able to take the our system and put it on their own channel, which got rid of some of the interference, or in some cases, depends on the age of the buildings that we're working with, or if they're one of the things we found out that, for instance, one of our sister institutions was using the same situation. They were not having the problems we were having because they were a smaller campus.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea with us is that, you know, we were a large campus of 27,000 students here this fall, with a lot of different people using a lot of different technology. Now, as you know now, you might see all kinds of different types of computers and technology that students are carrying around, taking their own notes on. And so we were having some interference. They flew the technician here, and then they said, well, we probably need to put it on our channel. And that was the thing about, they had their own channel, which, if I understand it correctly, it allowed for less interference and kind of allowed for information to go pretty much directly from the instructor to the captioner, and then which allowed the captioner to do a better job of transcribing the lecture.
We'll be right back with more on MTSU on the Record after this.
The MTSU Department of Art has the newest facility for visual arts in the state, with approximately 50,000 square feet of space, including high-tech computers and computer-driven equipment for multimedia, graphic design, printmaking, sculpture, painting, and ceramics. We feature a visiting artist lecture program and an exhibition program that exposes students to work by national and international artists. This is Jean Nagy, Chair of the Department of Art.
To find out more, visit mtsunews.com.
We return now to MTSU on the Record.
Now, it kind of behooves the faculty member in the event that they're wearing the lapel mic and they have a hearing impaired student using this technology in the classroom to sort of take this into consideration in a top of mind way. For example, if you've got the door open or the window open to, you know, try to air out, it's hot or, you know, in the classroom, but there's a ruckus or some ambient noise going on outside, you might want to shut the window, shut the door so that it doesn't interfere with, you know, the volume of your own speech. Or if, say, there are students in the classroom, there's a class discussion going on, the students aren't mic'd, but they might ask a question that the hearing impaired student might, you know, find to be of interest in for writing down in their notes. So it might behoove that faculty member to repeat the question that the other student in the classroom asked so that the hearing impaired student can take that down and put it in her notes along with the faculty member's answer to the question.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We do try to tell the instructor when possible, if they don't mind if questions are being asked, to repeat the questions. Although my adaptive technology coordinator pretty much tells me, and the captioner pretty much tells me that you'd be surprised how well they can hear things in the classroom that are being said. So they actually can may be able to hear a lot of questions that are being asked and can do that. So apparently these things, mics are much more sensitive than what I thought they could be, which may be a little bit scary to some people, that in some ways that anything that somebody says in a class is going to be heard by someone somewhere. But we try to make them aware that the information that is, you know, it's not like the captioner has other people listening to the class as well. It's only the captioner, wherever they're working from, that's listening to the lecture, and that person then provides the at the end of the class, of course, the information is kept on the student's laptop. So it's, you know, we are mindful of those kind of confidential things as well.
Now, that's really incredible range for a lapel mic to be able to pick up a student at the back of the room asking a question.
And my understanding is that is, I want to say something like maybe 50 feet to 80 feet range or something like that, whatever that, you know, and is what that is, the range of the mic. So we do tell the students, our students, to, you know, sit either A, as close to the on the front row as you possibly can, and that the professor to move around in the classroom as less as possible when they're lecturing. As you know, professors like, you know, like to walk and throughout the classroom and talk. And so we try to ask them to be sensitive to those kinds of things. Sometimes we have to do a couple of classes and kind of see how it works and then see what's happening. And then that gives us an idea. The student will come back and tell us, okay, are you pretty much getting everything that's being said? Is someone being left out, kind of thing? And the captioner can actually, you know, type back, I cannot hear as well or something. And then the student, you know, could stop the professor and raise her hand or something like that. The professor could walk over, look on the computer and see that the captioner has asked, you know, to not move as much or something like that. So some of it involves educating both the student on information, on setting up the computer and making sure that they're in the right place, and also doing some talking with the professor about that, hey, we're going to have a student in there, here's what's going to be happening. And so there's a little bit of education and cooperation that's required of all the parties involved.
Now, how astute are these captioners at picking up words that are germane to a wide variety of specific disciplines that are taught here on campus? Are they as good at picking up terms that are used in political science as they are at picking up long, complicated words used in chemistry or biology or any of the other sciences?
Yes and no. You know, yes, I think mostly we do send to the captioner our contractor, what type of class the person is going to have. Sometimes the captioner will request a textbook ahead of time so that they can have an idea of looking through the book and kind of getting an idea of what types of things are in the book so they can look ahead.
Now, I know you had at least one person using this in the spring semester. Have you gotten any feedback on how it worked from the student in particular?
Worked very well. This particular student was the student that they sent the engineer out to make sure that everything was working okay. And once they got that set up, we're very confident now that we're in good shape. As I said, the reason we like this company is that they have enough, and their contract is large enough, and they're well-respected enough that they actually, as I said, have their own channel. And as I understand this, it allows for a much better pickup of information, so they're not, there's less interference, I guess is the word.
And the notes that the student takes on the laptop, at the conclusion of the particular class of that particular semester, I'm sure he or she could keep the notes on a jump drive or something, but then does everything that has been downloaded onto that laptop then become the property of the university, or how does that work?
It belongs to the student. It would be the same as a student is going in and getting their own notes and have it there. We do get, we can request a copy of it since we're paying for it. Mm-hmm. So yes, in a sense, I guess if contractually, if you really did a contract, yes, we could request that the notes be turned over to us if we wish. We have not had occasion to do that yet and need that yet. Well, let's say that they disagree that they're not getting as good of information from the captioner as they'd like to have, then we could, for instance, then have a copy of the notes sent to us. If we are not as familiar with it, we could, for instance, ask the, somebody, if it's a social work class, we could ask the social work professor who taught the class and say, hey, listen, take a look at these notes. Are these pretty good notes?
Is this an accurate representation of what you lectured about?
Well put, yeah, exactly. They claim, most of the captioners will say something in the neighborhood of, 70 to 90% accurate, which is not bad. It's what they'll say that they're will hang their hat on.
We'll take a quick break and be back with more of MTSU on the Record.
Tennessee's farm families contribute to our state's economy, nutrition, and culture. The Tennessee Century Farms program at MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation acknowledges farms that have been in the same family for at least 100 years. To date, the program has certified more than 1,000 farms. This is Kenita Hankins, director of the Tennessee Century Farms program.
And for all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
And we're back to MTSU on the Record. Talk a little bit in a general way about how technology has changed your job. I have a good close friend who used to be a volunteer for audiobooks for the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, she would go into the studio and she would read the book, whatever, of Mice and Men, whatever it was, and it would be recorded onto a reel-to-reel. And if she made a mistake, if she stumbled, she had to stop, rewind the tape, go back, listen to, find the place where she stumbled, and then start play and record again at the exact spot where she had made the error so that she could record over it. And it was a very imprecise process. As anybody who's ever dealt with analog radio technology, you know exactly what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. And it was clumsy and difficult at best. I don't know how they ever got an entire audio book on tape unless they had somebody who could just read War and Peace flawlessly from beginning to end. It just seemed to me absurd, although a worthwhile and worthy venture. But talk about how you have had to keep up with technological changes in order to perform your job as well as you can for disabled students and the learning curve that you've had to go through.
Well, I actually was a user of the old reel-to-reel tape recorders.
Yeah. You
know? And back in the day...
Well, I hope they sounded better than I was able to manipulate them.
Well, it depends on what you put on there. I use mine mostly for music, because so it played the music pretty good. And it had the good songs on there, and I kind of liked them for that reason. But now... And then cassettes, of course, came into play, and we started using cassettes. And, of course, now it's computers and everything with the audio-visual audio things on there that you can listen to. We have some students who are very computer-savvy who actually can do all of those things. I mean, you really need to ask a freshman or a sophomore that question instead of an old guy like me, to be honest with you, because it is amazing to me. When I sit down, I'll walk in our Adaptive Technology Center here on the library, and you've got 10 or 12 students in there using 10 or 12 pieces of different types of equipment. One little small piece of equipment that's with a book on it. Another one may be at the computer with a book on it. Another one may yet be you know sitting over to the side with a tape recorder or something like that. And it is just amazing to me. So you got a wide variety of what's available nowadays, and with the advent of it of technology, and how skilled the individual is at using that equipment, it is important. To me, what I have to be adept at as a director of a program is that I have to kind of be know. Whom to trust to ask, and quite frankly,
you're dealing with the state's money here. You cannot afford to invest the state's money in substandard technology or technology that's going to be rapidly superseded by the next big thing.
That's exactly right. And quite frankly, we want our students to have, as my Adaptive Technology Coordinator Amy Burksaw says, the latest and greatest technology that's available. And we are a recipient of money, and MTSU has that. And the reason we have that is that we are a member of the Technology Access Fee Committee, which is the TAF, which is for computers. And we are given X number of dollars out of that technology access fee each year to purchase that. I think we get about $180,000 a year, which keeps us up to date on the latest technology that's available out there. And we use our students kind of as a test to kind of tell us what things work best for you. In addition to our research, we also want to know what our students can use, because it does us no good to go out and purchase something if we got to come back then and teach it to all of our students. So a lot of our students now are coming to us already with some knowledge of what technology that they're using. When they come to, for instance, when they come to visit campus, we will tell them what we have here. We'll tell them that we are primarily a JAWS user school, which is as our speech, or we are a Kurzweil type, which is a different type of speech school, so that they have an idea of what kind of what they're getting into if they choose to come to Middle Tennessee State.
Can they get TTY in their dormitory rooms?
They you know, and that's interesting too, because a lot of that stuff has become individual as well. We do have we don't have them in the dorms yet. Although last year, yes, a student can now order that free for their own particular room for themselves. It's a fascinating thing. So they have that. And we do have one, and we have it in the Adaptive Technology Center. We have a couple on campus. We might have one in the Kiefer University Center where any student can go in and use it. That's there for, we don't have one for each individual student. But as of right now, until the price changes, it's free, that for any student who is deaf, they can actually request to have one of those, and the company will come out and install it in their dorm room.
So the deaf, if the deaf student has their own TTY, the dormitory is equipped to have it in there. If they have their own TTY, they can put it in the dorm.
That's correct. Or they can come in and the companies right now are coming in and set it up. The dorms themselves do not, as of right now, we've not gone that route of having them put in the resident halls, because the students, as I said, the market sort of went where the individual student can get their own.
Right.
And most students like their own individual ones.
Mm-hmm. One more break, and we'll be back to MTSU on the record.
The Middle Tennessee Writing Project is a program that fosters the effective teaching of writing to students in kindergarten through high school. The Writing Project hosts annual summer institutes where teacher participants teach and learn from each other. In addition, the Writing Project sponsors summer writers' camps for youngsters. MTSU is one of 185 sites of the National Writing Project and one of only two in Tennessee. This is Dr. Bobby Solley, Project Director.
For more details, visit mtsunews.com.
Returning now to MTSU on the record. Let's talk a little bit about, this has nothing to do with inside the classroom, but it has to do with getting to the classroom mm-hmm. with just a few minutes we have
sure.
left. There's been a lot of construction on campus lately, and the number of handicapped parking spaces on campus has increased, most visibly to me right in back of this building, the Learning Resources Center. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what precipitated that.
A lot of it was, you know, we have a committee here called the MTSU Committee on Disability Issues. And one of the things that I was very proud that our university did way back years ago is that we created a committee made up of faculty members, administrators, and students on there. And I get a chance to appoint the student government president who appoints all of the students on the committees will ask me to recommend to them students to appoint there. And so what I try to do is appoint students who are campus-wide travelers, I call them, and who do a good job of looking at, and who use a lot of the things that we're talking about. And they actually recommend to us and to me where to put the disabled parking spaces or locate them based on the, we used to kind of put them where we think the buildings that the students use now. It used to be that our students with disabilities would major in particular. Now that our students are using the entire campus now, we just kind of strictly go by what the law kind of says. The law says that for every X number of parking spaces, the university needs to have a corresponding number of disabled parking spaces. Now, the reason that you might see some, we have to have a certain number on the campus as a whole. You might see some in a particular location of campus simply because our research tells us that there's no need of putting 9 disabled parking spaces out somewhere in a building that rarely do our students who need those spaces or persons would go to.
Right.
So we try to keep up with a location like this building you talk about. It's right in the center of campus. It's close to the university center. The grill is next door.
The quad.
The quad with the new education building. The the mass communications. So all those things are there. So and a lot of our students are majoring in all those things. So logic kind of tells us in some cases where to put them.
And all of this helps keep us in compliance with the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act, to which you alluded.
Yeah, that is correct. Mm-hmm.
John, thanks for being with us. Come back anytime, okay?
Gina, thank you very much. I hope that this information will be helpful to current and future students at MTSU.
If you need any more information about services available to disabled students at MTSU, John's email is jlharris@mtsu.edu, right?
Right.
MTSU on the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.